Thank you for listening, and welcome to When Pigs Fly. Talk from the heart, the mind, and the soul. And I'm your host, Andrew Fetter.
I can play that over and over. That was Marshall Tucker Band. Yeah, welcome everybody. This is Andrew Fetter with When Pigs Fly, and thank you for listening in, and for future listeners, past listeners, and all in between. Thank you also BBS Radio for purchasing my show. Oh, wow, isn't it glorious? We're in the midst of springtime. Birds are sprouting about, and great days ahead. A lot of times we look at things pretty in a negative circle, but we have to keep our positive view, you know, even with humanity. And even when I do my spiel today, sometimes I question, but I always have to be pop, you know, have some optimism. So I want to thank you all again. And of course, that was Marshall Tucker Band, Can't You See? And I was going to play a little bit more, but I figured that was just enough. I'm going to get into my spiel a little bit about Hugo Chavez, the dictator. I want to talk about real quickly. I know in all over the news with, you know, the Pope, you know, I mean, there's how many billion Catholics? So I understand their fortitude and their, focus on who is the leader of their church. But it's sort of withstanding who Pope Francis, who just elected. And by the way, this is my prediction. Something I've said before. This is the last pope of the Catholic Church. I also said as in the past, as the cross of the church goes in, as Vatican goes, so will the crescent. So you catch my drift. I think as both major churches go down of the Catholic churches, so will the mosque of Islam. And I think then that will transcend all organized religion and humanity will come to terms of its true nature of who they really are without the bullshit, which I've expressed many, many a times. Anyway, interesting to know, though, about the Pope Francis, the past. He was involved, you know, it's sort of weird how they picked a new pope, but the new pope has some little baggage behind him. I mean, not a little, but a lot. So, you know, it's amazing, though, because you think you want something like Jesus or something emulating or something very holy. And I mean, people have certain things in their past, but certain things are major. And I was always saying, what would Jesus say? Since they look at Jesus as not just a teacher, but they look make Jesus into a deity, son of God. So I'm just wondering, what would Jesus say about their selection of a guy who was a high-ranking official in the society of, within what they call the Society of Jesus of Argentina? When there was a military junta, which was installed in South America in Argentina in 1976, and according to LA Times, there are several priests with names by were who Orlando Yorio and Francisco Jalix, who were kidnapped in May of that year by that military dictatorship, and then a later service 5 months later, they were drugged and found later, you know, whatever, semi-nude in the field. And there's allegations, and they're accused of this unspecified involvement in these abductions associated was, who else but Jorge Mario Bergoglio, which was accused of involvement. He has not been not indicted, nor he has been, but been accused. I just find that very obscure. Not saying that you're always innocent until you're proven guilty, but in this case, there might be smoke where there's fire now, isn't it? This is not the only case, by the way, he's associated with. So he's also been involved with many cover-ups within the church some issues with, you know, molestations and stuff like that. But there's a whole lot of cardinals who are voting in the same thing that are obviously been involved with cover-ups of the child molestations and whatnot. That just takes candor what the Catholic Church really is, doesn't it? But it just sort of surprises me, anyway, or doesn't. Just laying out some facts. That was sort of recent news, and I just had a sort of like, well, that caught me off guard. And there's another thing that I caught off me and I just had to talk about and say, make a couple comments about it. And that was recently, I don't know if you know where in the UN they're trying to propose UN Declaration on Women's Rights. And it was surprising. The Egypt's ruling party, and let me put this clear. Egypt and many Muslim nations question the rights of women. Well, am I not surprised? Egypt's own government, its own Muslim Brotherhood, said this: women's rights could destroy societies, countries, and it should be outright rejected, condemned. I mean, this is her full declaration, what they said. Egypt's ruling Muslim Brotherhood, I'm just sort of reading off, warns that a UN declaration on women's rights could destroy society by allowing a woman to travel and might work. And she might use contraception without her husband's approval and let her control family spending. Oh my God. I mean, that would be a tragedy, wouldn't it? They also declare the Muslim Brotherhood said that this declaration would give wives full rights to file legal complaints against their husbands accusing them of a rape. God forbid if they can, you know, file a complaint they got raped by or harassed by their own husband. I mean, it also it gives them full rights to against their husbands while obliging the company authorities to deal with husbands' punishable similar to those prescribed for raping or sexually harassing a stranger. Oh my God. I mean, the women are just asking to have for some kind of protection, even from an abusive husband that might be beating them up and whatever. Oh my God. God forbid. Then the Muslim Brotherhood warned that the declaration would give women sexual freedom and legalize abortion and provide teenagers with contraception and give equality to women in marriage and require men and women to share duties, even like child care and things in the house. I mean, this is ironic. I'm almost blown away reading this. And then it said, they declared, it would allow equal rights to homosexuals and provide them protection. And it would also provide protection and respect for prostitutes and give equal rights to adulterous wives and illegitimate sons resulting from relationships. You mean it'd give equal rights to sons whose mothers were out of wedlock? Oh my God. The world's gonna crash. I mean, really now? I mean, I'm just blown away. So, look at it in face. This is what we're dealing with. And some 50% of Egypt voted for these people. This is not, by the way, just Egypt. I had a discussion with this with some people I know. And they're saying, well, that's our extremist, the Muslim. Not all Muslims are extreme. I says, excuse me, show me how what's moderate. This is what Muslims in the majority feel. I'm saying most Muslims do not live in the United States. They live in the Middle East. Go from Indonesia as well, which I know is not in the Middle East. Go to Saudi Arabia, Iraq, Iran, Kuwait, Saudi Arabia, Jordan, Lebanon, Egypt, which has how many? Sudan. I mean, I can keep on going all the way across Libya, Tunisia, Algeria. I mean, this is their norm. This is not extreme in their eyes. In our society, maybe Western society, where we look at women having equal rights, that would be extreme for them. So when the Egypt's Muslim Brotherhood declares women's rights could destroy society, countries, and should be rejected and condemned, of course they would. Just like with them, it would be free speech. With them, it would be like tolerance or civil rights or gay rights or human rights or a real democratic republic or real elections or having protection for the minority or having minority rights. Yeah. Let me really... I just had to talk about that a little bit. I just thought that was totally off the wall. So, anyway, you digest that. All you feel free to contact me. I have had a couple of lining up certain guests. I will announce them as they come. I do have a couple of people penciled in the coming months. I'm trying to get more set up. I have a lot of people sending me stuff constantly when I gave my announcement, started bringing more people. I'm really highly selective of who I bring on my show, as you all know. I'm doing that I feel that really demonstrates some information that I think would be highly enlightening for the general public. I don't look for people just generate their books to sell things. Somebody who has some information that I think is extremely important for humanity. Something a little bit different. And it's not just for, like, profit. It's more for the information at whole. As you know, I do not receive any funds from doing this show, actually the opposite. So to me, I'm just doing this for the greater good. And that's how I look at it. In the Machiavellian thing, I was going to talk to you about Chavez. Hugo Chavez. You know, some people hit me with a lot of, because I had sort of predicted his death last year, and I guess earlier this year, I forget. But I was surprised, but then again, like other things I just stated, I am not surprised about his support amongst a lot of people who stood by him, and it was sort of ironic to see who stood by him, but then not really. It reminded me of the old thing of seeing Stalin standing next to Hitler. You had both Islamic, fascist, Nazi-like entities and regimes standing alongside outright Stalin-like communist, socialist, totalitarianisms in support of him, because that's what he was. And when I read about Chavez, I was thinking of trying to emulate what kind of term sort of was on my head that sort of matched, characterize him. And I don't like using stamps, but I thought a perfect thing to describe it, one word, and it kept on popping in my head. Machiavellianism. I don't know why. Maybe the universe was trying to tell me something. So I went to look it up even as I was writing up this spiel I was going to tell you today. And the basics is Machiavellianism, and this is according to Oxford English Dictionary, is the employment of cunning and duplicity in a statecraft or in general conduct. It's derived from the Italian Renaissance diplomat and writer known Niccolò Machiavelli, who wrote the infamous Il Principe, which the prince, in other words. The word has been used in similar use in modern psychology, where it describes one of the dark tribe personalities characterized by a dubious interpersonal style associated with cynical beliefs and pragmatic morality. Now, think about that. That really emulates Chavez with his cynical beliefs, I believe, and his pragmatic morality. I mean, his ends justify his means. And also what he's about, which most people don't really realize. And that's what I'm going to get into. Basically, as most people don't realize, Cesar Chavez was one of the most prolific violator of human rights. Yes, he was a violator, even by the terms of the UN. Yet he was put on the UN Human Rights Council, which doesn't surprise you, because you have Syria, who kills tens of thousands of people, and they were put on the Human Rights Council, right? They even had Sudan is on the Human Rights Council, while they were killing people in Darfur and still killing, which is a whole other thing we've talked about the UN in the past. That's a total joke. But it's amazing how Chavez is deemed some kind of MLK, Martin Luther King, Cesar Chavez, or made to be a very great person. Yeah, he was. It was pretty disgusting what he did. Here's a little report on the things that he did, and I'm just going to read off. This is actually an actual report of him, Mr. Chavez, while in government, violations. This is actually fact. There's no left, right, wing spiel to it. Here's a report. It was done in chapter Venezuela, in a world report chapter. The weakening of Venezuela's democratic system, checks and balances under the Hugo Chavez president, has contributed to the precarious human rights situation. Without judicial checks on its actions, the government has systematically undermined the right of free speech, free expression, workers' freedom of association, and the ability of human rights groups to even protect rights. Weeks before the new assembly, with a substantial opposition composition, took office in January of 2011, Chavez supporters in the legislature adopted several laws that increased the government's ability to undercut rights. Police abuses and impunity remained a grave problem. Prison conditions were and are deplorable, and fatality rates remain high due to inmate violence. Judicial independence, an example of his obstructionism and outright disgusting, basically, you know, he basically ruled as a king. He was a tyrant. In 2004, Chavez and his legislative allies conducted a political takeover of the Supreme Court, filling it with government supporters and creating a new measure that made it make it possible to purge justices from the court. In other words, he could unilaterally just put whoever he wanted to be the judge. The judge were basically by his own selection, pure and simple. No question. In December 2010, the outgoing legislatures from Chavez's party modified the timeline so they could make appointments even before leaving office. They appointed 9 permanent justices and 32 stand-ins, including several allies. Since 2004, the court has largely abdicated its role as a check on executive power and failed to protect fundamental rights enshrined in the Constitution. In 2011, the Supreme Court President Luisa Estela Morales declared that the laws in Venezuela respond to an ideological purpose, while Justice Fernando Torre Alba stated that the courts must severely sanction behaviors or cases that undermine the construction of Bolivarian socialism. Individuals may face reprisals if they rule against government interests. Get it? Individual judges may face reprisals if they rule against government interest. In December of 2009, Judge Maria Lourdes Afuni was detained on the day she authorized the conditional release of Eligio Sendino, a banker accused of corruption. Afuni was following a recommendation by the United Nations Working Group on Arbitrary Detention, given that Sendino had been in pretrial detention for almost 3 years, although Venezuelan law prescribes a 2-year limit. So basically, under Venezuelan law, she let this person out because it's basically they were detained without having a hearing, right? We have habeas corpus, and we also have, you know, due process within so much time. Their time period was 2 years, so the guy was in jail for 3 years without having a trial, right? So she let him out. So what they did the day after that happened, the day after Chavez publicly branded Afuni as a bandit who should receive a maximum of 30 years in prison. So Chavez by own hand put her in prison. She was accused of corruption, abuse, and authority, favoritism, and evasive justice. Her case is pending before a judge who stated publicly, I quote, "I will never betray my commander because I take the revolution in my blood." Judge Afuni was held in pre-trial detention in a deplorable conditions in a violent prison for over a year and remains still under house arrest. Even 3 human rights reporters and Inter-American Commission on Human Rights have denounced her arrest, calling it for her release. I will go a little bit more into that because I was looking at some research regarding that, and I was just sort of blown away by the case itself. I think I still have it in here somewhere. But notwithstanding, what happened was she was actually raped and beaten repeatedly while she was in trial. I mean, while she was in prison. This is assumed by direction of Chavez, but there's absolutely no proof of course, but come on. She was basically tortured and beaten. A prominent judge for what? Because she let out somebody who was, you'd call it like an opposition or whatever. legislating by decree in December 2010. These are just examples of his abuses. There's a plethora of more. I just gave you a select of many. In December 2010, the outgoing National Assembly passed an enabling law that granted Chavez broad powers to legislate by decree on wide range of issues for 18 months. That means he basically was Caesar. It was an equivalent to the Roman Empire handing over the decree to the emperor having full rights. The word tyrant, this is, by the way, where tyrant comes from. That is a tyrant. The tyrant has full dictatorship. He, by decree, and people cannot go around this. There's not by democracy. He had full dictatorship by decree. He dictated law. He didn't legislate law. He didn't executive power by law. He dictated it. And he not only dictated within law, he dictated by within its own implementation of within even the judges themselves, like I just said. The judge's vague provisions could directly impact the exercise of rights by, and for example, allowing the president, Chavez, to determine which penalties can be imposed when someone commits a crime. As of 2011, Chavez had adopted over 20 legislative decrees, including one reinstating crimes previously delegated by the legislative. The Supreme Court upheld constitutionality of this decree. Of course, he selected the entire Supreme Court, which criminalized several banking practices, arguing that economic crimes are crimes against humanity and could not be decriminalized. So that was just the judicial part. Then there was the freedom of media. Venezuela had enjoyed a vibrant public debate in which anti-government and pro-government media criticized and would defend the Constitution. However, the government has been discriminating under Chavez against media that air political opponents' views, strengthened the state's ability to limit free speech, and created a power incentives for government critics of self-censorship. Laws attributing to a climate of self-censorship include the 2005 amendments to the Criminal Code, extending the scope of the Escotillo laws that criminalize disrespect of high government officials, and a broadening statute allowing arbitrary suspension of channels for the vaguely defined offense of incitement. In December 2010, National Assembly extended the scope of the statute to include the Internet. It also amended the telecommunication laws, granting the government power to suspend unrevoked concessions to private outlets if it is convenient for the interests of the nation or demanded by public order and security. The government has abused its own control of broadcasting frequencies to punish radio and television with overtly critical program. In 2009, the government broadcasting authority, Conatel, closed 32 radio stations and reported that over 200 others were under review without providing a list of the stations being investigated. Several stations have since limited their critical programming. In this November of 2011, Conatel suspended several radio stations while it investigated, but no additional stations have been closed as of this time. RCTV, though, Venezuela's most proper critical television station, in 2007. RTCTV International, the cable channel that replaced it, was removed from cable broadcasting in 2010 after Conatel ordered that the cable providers suspend transmitting channels that it had not certified as international channels. The RTCV lawyers say Conatel has rejected RTV's request to obtain this certification, and the channel remains unable to transmit in Venezuela. Conatel has opened seven administrative investigations against Global Vision, the only TV channel available without cable critical of the government. That could lead to the station's suspension or revocation of license. In October 2011, Conatel fined Global Vision of $2.1 million for allegedly violating the broadcasting statute when it aired images of a June or prison riot. The other six cases have yet to be resolved. Some have pending from year over year. In 2010, the government adopted vague norms that expand its power to limit access to almost any information it holds, including creating a Center for Situation Studies of the Nation with broad powers to limit public dissemination of information or facts or circumstances it deems confidential. As you see, Chavez basically shut down, closed off, determined what the freedom of speech is, whether it's from paper to radio to television. It basically create a pravda, a Soviet Union type, a Soviet-like system of totalitarianism, likened to the Soviets, likened to the Nazis, where it basically shut down, where his voice was the voice. Anything critical of him would be deemed a violation against the state and against him. Anything against the state or its interests were deemed illegal. So, was that a good person? How different is he from Stalin or Hitler? He also began prosecuting government critics. I mean, several proponents, critics of Chavez's government, I'm reading this off now, have been targeted for criminal prosecution in recent years. The court's lack of independence, by the way, this is the report, that's what I'm reading off from, it's from the World Part of the UN. The court's lack of independence reduced the chances of them receiving a fair trial. In July 2011, Oswaldo Alvarez Paz, a former governor of Zulia State and member of an opposition party, was sentenced to 2 years in prison. Sentenced 2 years in prison for what? Criticizing Chavez's administration on TV. So if you criticize him, you're thrown in jail for 2 years. But he's a great guy, right? Alvarez Paz was convicted of dissemination of false information for saying that Chavez is not a Democrat, that Venezuela has turned into a center of operation that facilitates the business of drug trafficking. It's accused. Things have said worse about Bush and Bush Sr. People say stuff about Obama. You don't see the government throwing them in jail. People say stuff about past Tony Blair and other parliament members in Israel. They talk about Bibi Netanyahu or others. You don't see them throwing them in jail for it, criticizing their government. Of course, you would see that in places like Iran. They'll kill you in place and do the same thing in places like Syria. Birds of a feather? Maybe that's why they are so tight. Now, Alvarez Paz is now serving a sentence on conditional liberty but cannot leave the country without judicial authority. Then there's, of course, Guillermo, I apologize if I pronounce this wrong, Zulu Agla, president of the Global Vision, who remains, by the way, under criminal investigation for allegedly disseminating false information and for offending the president. I offended the president, so he's, going to jail. At a public meeting on March 2010, Zuago accused Chavez of ordering the shooting of demonstrators during a 2002 coup speech. In June, televised speech, Chavez expressed outrage that Zulu was still free. A week later, police arrived at Zulu's house to arrest him and his son and all irregularities in their car, sales, business, and investigation their lawyers said that had been installed for months. The two men who were not at home simply fled the country. Here's another one. In 2011, of March, Ruben Gonzalez, Secretary General of the Firmino or Orinoco Union, was sentenced to over 7 years in prison for organizing and participating in a strike with 2,000 workers in Guyana to protest a government-owned company for failure to comply with a collective bargaining agreement. Gonzalez was convicted for incitement of crimes, restricting freedom to work, violating the prohibition to enter security zones. Not only was prosecution of Gonzalez criticized by the International Labor Organization and Venezuelan unions, but it was also denounced by pro-government labor leaders in Venezuela. Upon appeal, the Supreme ordered another judge to retry Gonzalez. The case against who Gonzalez was, who was released on a conditional, remain pending at this time. So even a union leader who organized a strike was thrown in jail. Is that freedom? Is that being democratic? Sounds pretty dictatorial. Again, dictatorial, tyrant. But, man, he was a great guy. Free at last. No, he was not MLK. Human rights defenders. Here's a real good one. I was amazed when I saw this in the report. Chavez government has aggressively sought to discredit human rights defenders. In June, Justice Minister Tariq El Asami accused Roberto Prado of Venezuela's observation prisons of destabilizing the prison system and having been accomplice in the massacre of inmates in the past. After several official media outlets discredited Prado, he received multiple death threats and left Venezuela for 2 months. And then here's another. In July 2010, the Supreme Court ruled that obtaining financial resources, either directly or indirectly from foreign states with the intent of using them against the public in the interest of the people, could constitute treason. That same month, members of Chavez's political party filed a criminal complaint with the Attorney General's office, alleged that several local human rights organizations, NGOs, had committed treason by receiving funding from foreign donors. Over 30 NGOs are currently under investigation, according to local media. In December 2010, the National Assembly adopted two laws that, if applied to human rights organizations, could severely undermine their ability to work independently. The law for defense of the political sovereignty and national self-determination blocks NGOs that defend political rights or monitor the performance of public bodies from receiving international funding. It also imposes stiff fines on organizations that invite foreigners who express opinions that offend institutions or undermine national sovereignty. The Organic Law on Social Control, which regulates the work of organizations and individuals that have an impact on general collective interests, states that individuals must follow law's socialist principles and values. Those who violate the law may face civil, administrative, and criminal legalities. I mean, go on, Mr. Human Rights guy out there who thinks, oh my God, Chavez, Sean Penn, you know, he was a really good guy that he wouldn't even allow any. I mean, here's an example. You could not even get Amnesty International. Couldn't even go in there because they get money from foreign areas, right? That's why you didn't get anything stipulated about Venezuela. There are no human rights organizations are non-existent inside Venezuela. They're thrown in jail. They're non-existent. They're not allowed. Do you think somebody can come to their country and just question, say, hey, you know, I was wondering about your country, blah, blah, blah. If they brought in a professor from, let's say, Harvard or NYU or Oxford, and then who want to talk about, you know, Chavez's policies, it's illegal. It's a crime. If you say anything about Chavez or his government's interests or say anything negative about any of his officials, it's jail. You can't criticize. There is no free speech in Venezuela. Period. Gone. Jailed. They control the media. They control... God, this almost sounds like George Carlin talking about the true owners. It doesn't matter what owners. You have corporate owners, now you have new owners. That's capitalism versus socialism. Same crap, just different owners. People don't get that. Anyway, police abuses. Violent crime is rampant right now in Venezuela, where extrajudicial killings by security remain a problem. Get it? Extrajudicial killings by security agents. What they're telling you is basically their own little agents run around and kill people and murder, and because they just perform their own version of justice. The Minister of Interior and Justice estimated that the police commit one of every five crimes. One of every five crimes is committed by their own police. This is according to the most recent official statistics. Law enforcement agents alleged have killed 7,998 people in January 2000, the first quarter of 2009. Impunity for human rights violations remains the norm. In 2010, prosecutors charged individuals allegedly responsible for abuses in less than 3% of the cases investigated. And less than 3% of these cases are ever investigated. That means they're not investigated at all. In April of 2008, Chavez administration issued a decree that established a new police force that enacted measures to promote non-abusive policing. Proposed by commission comprised of government and NGO representatives. At this rate, there has not been one single thing. This has not even become an ineffective. Prison conditions. As I mentioned, Venezuelan prisons are among the most violent in Latin America. Weak security, deteriorating infrastructure, overcrowding, insufficient and poorly trained guards, corruption allow armed gangs to effectively control prisons. Hundreds of violent prison deaths every year. In 2011, June, at least 25 people were killed or 60 seriously injured, including members of their National Guard, after clashes between inmates and El Rodeo prisons. Their labor rights that we already discussed. The National Electrical Council, the CNE, a public authority, has the power to organize and certify all union elections, violating international standards that guarantee the workers' right to elect their representative in full freedom according to the conditions they determine. So they determine it. They will establish the unions whose elections have not been CNA certified, may not participate in collective bargaining. For several years, the government has promised to reform their relevant labor and electoral laws to restrict state interference in unions, but they have not. Reforms that explicitly state the union's elections held without CNA partition are legally valid and were still pending before a national assembly. That's still sitting there. They have not changed it. It's key international actors. Venezuela's government has increasingly rejected international monitoring of its human rights record. In 2011 of September, the Supreme Court president held that Venezuela will respect all international agreements only if international bodies respect Venezuelan sovereignty and jurisdiction. In 2011, the Inter-American Court of Human Rights ruled that Venezuela must allow Leopoldo Lopez, a prominent opposition leader, to run for public office. Lopez, a former Caracas district mayor, has been barred from seeking electoral office by the country's Comptroller General since 2008 due to corruption allegations for which he was never formally charged or prosecuted or convicted. The court has also found that Venezuela is failing to adopt measures in order to protect individuals facing imminent risk to their lives or physical integrity. In October 2011, many governments expressed concern regarding the human rights situation in Venezuela. During the Human Rights Council Universal Periodic Review of the country, Venezuela's government accepted most recommendations that states made, but rejected several key recommendations, which were aimed at protecting free speech, strengthening judicial independence, complying with inter-American court binding rulings, and supporting the independent work of NGOs. This is just his, you know, as his dictatorship. Now what I'm going to ask is, those out there, how would you feel if I said to you, Hugo Chavez hated blacks. He hated African Americans. He was a bigot against African Americans. You'd be offended. Oh my God. What if I said Hugo Chavez hated Mexicans? You'd be all offended, right? Up in arms. Wow, this guy's an asshole. Whoa, wow. He said something pretty anti. What if he said stuff pretty racist about Asians? Said stuff about Japanese or Chinese. Pretty offensive, right? So why does he get the okay card when he is flatly anti-Semitic, Jew-hating? I mean, Hugo Chavez is very... has the quality of the anti-Semitic Daniel Ortega, who reigns still the hero of the left. Americans' left support of the Sandinistas, which led to the destruction of the Jewish community in El Salvador. And the life of the Venezuelan Jews under Hugo Chavez is so ugly, it's demeaning. They're like second-class citizens. They almost live, and they live literally 1930s Germany under Chavez. That's a fact. Without the real laws, but it's implied. Chavez's many anti-Jewish statements in the media, like calling Jews pigs, denying the Holocaust, and even accusing of Israel against genocide of Palestinians, contributed an atmosphere of anti-Semitism that grew worse and worse by year by year by year. I mean, for Jews, it suddenly became frightening to even walk the streets for dark from being harassed, giving a image of 1930s Nazi Germany. Their own synagogues, their own the Jewish community buildings were spray-painted with swastikas and anti-Semitic slogans. That was a feeling that Chavez was egging on the populace, speaking the people's language against the Jews. Sounds familiar? He was also quick to say that Venezuelan's large businesses are controlled by Jews, stealing the nation's money. Gee, who said that? Didn't Hitler say that about the Jews in Germany? The Jewish community did not merely suffer from their economic harassment. Jewish operatives would frequently follow children from rich Jewish families in order to kidnap them and demand ransom. In other instances, after Chavez had gained control of the police and the army and the defense forces, would occasionally place closure on Jewish community schools with the children inside and their children parents unable to gain access to them. The pretext was that the Jews had hidden weapons and that the searches had to be conducted to confiscate them. The harassment and restrictions overall atmosphere made life as a Jew in Venezuela almost unbearable. The nation would have said it and replaced Chavez with another Hitler. What finally broke is what many, and there's establishment of what to do with their living conditions to still live there. I mean, they were pleased to leave, not pass such certain laws. Then it became a law that Chavez implemented. The law said that parents up to age 3 belonged to the parents. Listen to this one. Up to age 3, the children belonged to the parents. From 3 on, the age of 10, they were to be moved to a school that is under the control of the government. From 10 until 18 years old, they will study in a military boarding school. In other words, they owned them. It was clear, plainly more than geo-consideration that made Jews the enemy of the Venezuelan mainstream. Hugo Chavez, even by Oliver Stone's recent movie, depicted this. As Lametz and Sanchez explained, that anti-Semitism inherent in Chavismo, as he called it, is a result, at least to some degree, of the influence of Norberto Cancela, the South American political thinker who helped Chavez shape his views. Carrizo was a vicious anti-Semite and Holocaust denier, one whom Chavez called intellectual, deserving great respect. Lomas and Chavez noted that the imprint of Cancela's idea can be found everywhere within Chavez's policies, statements, and strategies. I mean, for example, after the Tiferet Israel Synagogue in Caracas was ransacked in January 2009 and anti-Semitic graffiti was splattered on their walls, Chavez said this: "It is themselves who did it." Yeah. In 2007, Venezuelan police raided the Hebraic Social Cultural Sports Center in Caracas, supposedly out of fear that one of its members was planning to assassinate Chavez. 3 years previous to that, the Colegio Hebraic, its Jewish school in Caracas, was the victim of a similar raid, which the Simon Wiesenthal Center, which monitors anti-Semitism activity, called the world, "This is just another pogrom." The prototypical Jew, according to Chavez, is one at once weak and powerful, lowly industrious. Excuse me for the helicopter. Prototypical Jew, according to Chavez, is at once weak and powerful, lowly, and industrious. In other words, he used the same basic stereotypes that proliferated in Nazi Germany. Pro-Chavez have publicly disseminated copies of protocols of the Elders of Zion, the early 20th century Tsarist forgery outlining alleged worldwide Jewish conspiracy to seize power in the world. Prominent Jewish figures have been publicly denounced for supposedly being disloyal to the Bavarian cause, and Semitic banks have been accused of plotting against the regime. The anti-Semitism expressed by the government is stealing and spilling over in the street as anti-Semitism, in which synagogues are consistently being vandalized with a frequency and vision never seen in this country. This February, a political opponent of Chavez, Henrique Cabrera Rodunsky, was a target of an article, national radio article called "The Enemy is Zionism," accused him of standing for Israeli ideology covertly. And this, by the way, is found in the CNN report. Yet, people like Sean Penn was there. Yet, people like Jesse Jackson was at honored him at his funeral like he's some MLK. I think that these folks, like Jesse Jackson and Sean Penn, should be sent to Iran and live permanently and realize what it is to realize what is freedom. What is fascism? Whether it be Islamic or socialist fascism, it's still dictatorial. It's totalitarianism. They are for totalitarianism. Pure and simple. I don't care if you take from Stalin to Hitler, they're both totalitarian in their implementation. Left or right, it's still one and the same. It's just changing owners. It is national socialist, communist, government control. We tell you what to do. We implement. We pick our judges. We do everything. We seize your freedom of speech. But it goes even further. You have to realize if these two would be put in jail for either their religious or political views in Iran. Yet they stand beside Ahmadinejad, Assad, and all those who support Chavez. Birds of a feather, huh? It's very interesting how, in fact, Chavez, who despises America, who called Bush the Diablo, the devil. But when he became president, when he was head of Venezuela, he actually increased oil to the United States. It was not because, oh, he's being kind. It was about money. You don't think that was a game? Chavez is part of the world New World Order. Yeah, duh. When he became in power, our oil import to the United States from Venezuela jumped through the roof. He even expanded his Citgo stations all across the United States. Is that a coincidence? Citgo, by the way, is the nationalized Venezuelan company. And by the way, Chavez made millions from it. A real capitalist. Yeah, he was helping others, but it was all a game. There is no difference, by the way, socialism from our capitalism. They just have different owners, and they're called political leaders. Yet people say, look how much he helped the people. Look what he did for the people. Well, here's something to pop your bubble. Hitler helped the German people out of their economic depression. Hitler was loved by the German people. His National Social Party were voted into power. Yet, with all that Hitler did to make Germany economically stronger, creating the People's Wagon, Volkswagen, and much of the proletariat behind him, would you say Hitler was great? No. For those who supported Chavez, as I said earlier, he sent men to be tortured and beat and rape a woman judge. Just because what? To release a political opponent from jail. Chavez hates Jews. He is a Jew hater. So again, how would you feel if a leader who hated Jews, hated blacks, Mexican, Asians, would you say you'd give him a free pass? Chavez supported brutal regimes like Iran. If you support Chavez and you think he's all right, go live in Iran. Leave the United States. See how fast and well you can speak freely. See about speaking about socialist policies. See how far you get. Chavez supported regimes such as today's Assad Syria, who has been slaughtering by thousands. Today they're saying upwards of 80,000 Syrians have been killed, brutally murdered. Yet, Chavez is a hero? No, Chavez is no hero. But his supporters marks how fucked up humanity still is. It really demonstrates how fucked up humanity is. It shows how fucked up these people are, the Sean Penns, the Jacksons. They're screwed up to think that this person's, unless they are, they hate Jews. They're total anti-Semites. They want a totalitarian system. They do not like our Constitution. They don't like free speech. They don't like freedom. And I don't wish anybody ill, because in fact, everyone is part of us. But when people call themselves humanitarians or for civil rights like Jesse Jackson and Chavez, and then they honor Chavez like he was MLK or Cesar Chavez, do you think Martin Luther King today would look at go, oh, wow, that was a cool thing what you did, Jesse, heading over to honor Chavez. He would be spinning over in his grave. Do you think Cesar Chavez would be all happy? No, it's fucked up. And by the way, you know how he was so viciously anti-Semitic and Jew-hating, by the way, that even he was admonished by Castro. Fidel Castro starts yelling at him about it, publicly, about his anti-Semitism. So what next? Is Sean Penn and Jesse Jackson and all of a sudden they're going to honor, would they honor Stalin? Would they honor Khomeini? Would they honor Assad, Gaddafi, Bin Laden, Arafat, Hitler, Pol Pot, Pinochet, Idi Amin? Who else? I don't even know their names right now, the leaders who created the murders in Sudan. Serbia. I mean, go on and on and on. Many of these people who talk of love, but then live in the us versus them theme. That is the problem. See, you always have these people who want us versus them. Think about it. That's what I just want to demonstrate, even with Chavez. It's us versus them. It's the us against Jews. It's us against somebody. It's us against the blacks. It's us against the Arabs. It's us against somebody. It's them against them. It's Shiite versus Sunni, Sunni against Shiite, Catholic versus Protestant, black against white, rich against poor, poor against rich. It's the mentality of separatism, the mentality of hatred. In reality, we're all one and the same. When anyone professes the us versus them theme, I ask you, they are not being righteous and they are not being humanitarian. In reality, we are all one. And I've said this numerous times. In reality, we're all nothing more than leaves on a tree with different views, and yet branched on the same tree of life, the branches being humanity, the tree of the trunk being all living and non-living on the earth, with the same common roots being nourishing itself from the same ground, that being the universe, that being God. And I want to thank you all for listening in. And I'm going to close with one cool song. God bless you all, and listen to The Fire on the Mountain by, of course, The Grateful Dead. God bless you all, and thank you for listening. Thank you.
Thank you, and God bless you all. Have a glorious, glorious weekend. Of course, that was Grateful Dead, Fire in the Mountain. Mm-hmm.